This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 2nd of November, 1955. The title of this lecture is Trying and Communication. This lecture is 58 minutes long, reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
Okay, this is November the 2nd. 1955, 4th London ACC. Haven't got a thing to talk to you about this morning, not a thing. You're all doing a mediocre job. Whenever you decide to start auditing people, let me know. People scowl. Here they've been sweating their guts out. That's a mixed metaphor. Speaking of mixed metaphors, the champion mixed metaphor of the world is probably on the congressional record. A congressman stood up and he says, Gentlemen, I smell a rat. I see him floating in the air. But believe me, gentlemen, before the hour is out, I shall nip him in the bud. Well, in spite of my unkind remarks on the subject, I think you're all doing, well, almost mediocre. You know what's the matter with you? You're all trying hard. You're all trying. You're gritting your teeth and flexing your muscles and trying. That's what's the matter. Once upon a time, I was driving a car during a lightning storm. Racing car, cross-country race. Tree blew down, but it was a localized storm, and it came on suddenly and passed away, summer. Tree blew down, and up over a rise, a truck was in the middle of the road. There was no way to pass that truck, no way whatsoever to pass the truck. There was absolutely no way to slow down that car. And there was a tree across half of the road, but there was a hole under the tree. And so I parked the car there very neatly without even denting the paint. I didn't give a damn for nothing. So what? Thud. Backed the car out and went on my way. Now this is an interesting thing. State of mind. They have an old saying around the eastern or western or southern or northern counties or someplace or in the middle west of the U.S. about holding your mouth just right. And if you hold your mouth just right, well, you get the job done. Well, I don't know if you're holding your mouth just right to get the auditing done. I think you're trying too hard, so I'm going to talk to you about trying hard. Let's get the idea of picking up the grand piano during the fire and putting it out on the front lawn. Eight men come along later, move it in 2 hours. You took it out in 3 minutes. There's a law involved with this, and it's an interesting law, since it seems to have escaped the notice of the physicist and Sir Isaac Newton and some other chaps. But it evidently tends in this direction. The law of interaction is so far from right that this law, I'm about to tell you, is probably much closer to right. And this law goes this way. As mass approaches infinity, the force required to move it must approach zero. Try that on your slide rule. As mass approaches infinity, the force required to move it must approach zero. If a Thetan could think a sufficiently light thought, he could spin Earth on its axis in the opposite direction. But if he thinks a heavy and arduous thought, he isn't going to spin nothing, no place, no how. There's a great deal of information on this subject, and none of it's correct. And I don't even know if the law I told you is correct, but there's more evidence to support it than there is evidence to support Newton's law of interaction. Because we have Newton's law of interaction, we do not have any space flight at this time. Now, it's not my purpose this morning to titillate the appetite of the boys who love to do and die with old, good old space opera, Galaxy U. But it is my purpose to point out to you that you are dealing with energy, space, mass, and in the case of some preclears, mass. Now, if you're dealing with these quantities, then perforce, some of the laws regulating their behavior would tend to come into being. Now, let's look at one of these laws, a law very, very native to this universe, physics, the bank, the reactive bank, and so forth. When energy departs from point A and courses its way toward point B, we have a flow. Is that idiotic enough? Well, it's an unstated law. Must have been somebody's consideration, sometime or another. We have points A and B. And when we have some particles departing from A and going toward B, we have a flow. And that's the definition of a flow. When you say, "Hello, Joe," to Joe, you have an idea proceeding by the vibration of airwaves from where you are to where Joe is. How does it get there at all? Well, it never gets there. No particles ever get there. The particles just jump up and down on the principles of rarefaction and condensation between you and Joe. You have an idea that your words course through space and go over and hit Joe's eardrums. The physiological idea of life is an interesting, if erroneous, one. But the physiological idea of life is no more erroneous than the science of physics itself. Physics is not true. It is simply well worked out and convincing. And that would be called heresy. You could start a riot in MIT with that statement. Their God has been attacked. Their God is a large, round, globular thing with lots of mass. Their God has been attacked. But it is not a deity. It happens to be a bunch of ideas and considerations which got patterned together, on which we all agreed and about which we are thoroughly convinced. And we're sufficiently convinced that we conceive the same behavior patterns to take place whenever we look at the same phenomena. And your own knowledge of physics, which you have not known very neatly and very, very gracefully, so that it's out of sight as far as you're concerned, is so superior to the honorest honor student of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, the California Institute of Technology, and the London University Philatelist Society, that you would have a hard time if you knew all you knew about physics. You would have a hard time getting elementary enough to write an advanced paper for the Atomic Energy Commission. You'd have an awfully hard time. You must have a considerable knowledge of this subject of physics for this excellent reason. You see particles depart from point A and arrive at point B. You go gab, gab, walla, walla at Joe, and the rarefaction and condensation occurs between your vocal cords and through the air to Joe. His eardrums go flickety-flack, and he receives the communication. All that is transferred, however, is an idea. No words flowed. Anytime when you have produced a syllable out of your mouth and carried it arduously over and stuffed it into Joe's ears in order to make a conversation, you have not had much communication. So a flow is not a conversation. A flow is not a communication. It isn't. A flow is definitely so far from a communication that when you get the idea that your communications are flowing, they jam. A telegraph wire is an interesting thing. They string a piece of copper between key A and receiver B, and somebody goes tippity-tap on key A, and receiver B goes tippity-tap. You get the idea that a bunch of electrical patterns of some kind or another, or electrical particles, rather, flowed down this telegraph wire and arrived over there at that receiving set? Is that what your idea of electricity is? Well, you'd certainly better alter it, because that isn't what happens at all. Not even a physicist believes this happens. What happens is he sets into vibration a certain number of electrons in the wire, and these vibrations go on the same principle that you line up two billiard balls, kick one, and the second one flies away. Each of the electrons kick each of the electrons on the wire, and you get the signal arriving by relay from particle to particle at the receiving set. No electronic particle of any kind departs from key A and is received at key B. As a matter of fact, electrons flow along an electrical wire at the rate of about 10 feet a second or less. Sometimes it all depends on the density of the wire. But it's very, very minute. It is a flow that you would be able to conceive very easily. And it just happens that it flows this way. There are other parts of the wire flowing back the other way. But flow has nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. An idea goes along an electrical wire. And the idea was tickety-tack at one end and is tickety-tack at the other end. And no electronic particle of any kind goes from the key to the receiver. No single particle of air departs from your lungs and arrives in Joe's ears unless you're breathing down his throat. Particles just plain don't move as the communication, except when we're writing letters. And there we solidify the particle, and we put it through the air, and we put it down in somebody's lap, and he reads it. But the funny part of it is the particle at no time was the communication. At no time was this particle a communication. I don't care how many words you wrote on the piece of paper, how elaborately you wrote them, what graceful calligraphy you engaged yourself upon, not one single spatter of ink arrived in Joe's eyeball. Not one. Once again, no matter how minute the interval, the idea has traveled through space as an idea to arrive at the recipient. It's quite interesting. Quite interesting. So you go thinking you communicate by pushing particles around. And you don't communicate by pushing particles around. You communicate by pushing ideas around, but how do you push an idea around? Well, you invent a lot of considerations about how things vibrate so that something will arrive there having departed from here. You see this? And first and foremost, all you have done at all is inject meaning across into and across space. And if anybody can give me the mass or cube root of meaning, I will make sure that he gets the the Pulitzer Peace Prize. You understand this? Getting some grasp on this business? Very, very peculiar thing. Very peculiar. We see all these particles traveling in all these directions and all these bodies being shoved in all these various quarters of the globe and traveling here and traveling there and so forth. And what do you know? What do you know? Something very peculiar is happening. At no time does an idea ever become a particle, but a particle can be dreamed up to represent an idea. Remember that the particle can be dreamed up to represent the idea any and all times, but at no time is the reverse actually true. So we have this fantastic thing. We have this fantastic thing. Everybody believes that his communication is a flow which goes from A and arrives at B. No, it is not. Matter of fact, it's doubtful if there's any space traversed by the idea at all. I think you probably have to work very, very hard to keep enough terminal space in order to get the illusion of an idea crossing it. The essence of simplicity is the understanding of human communication. You got a bunch of mocked up stuff about how it gets to you, but in essence, you're right where it's picked up. You're right where it emanates. You're at the point of origin, the point of receipt, simultaneously, otherwise you'd never have a communication. That's interesting, isn't it? What are you doing flinching from a bad-smelling dog, huh? You're right where he is emanating that communication. That I guarantee. Maybe you flinch just so you'll go on having a universe. Maybe it's a big mock-up. Maybe you make an interesting flinch there so as to convince yourself and others that there is space there. Maybe you say, ooh, space. But it is greatly true, unswervably true, that particles are not communications, but particles, at the very, very best, could stand for, as a symbol, a communication. But that's a consideration, too. The particle that is standing for the communication, that it is flying through space, is also a consideration. So a communication is an interchange of ideas. And it has various parts if we're going to have a universe. And if we're not going to have a universe, it doesn't have any parts. It's an idea. I think glup, you receive glup. There you are. Syllabulation, articulation, all of these various things are alike considerations. And now, having collapsed the universe for you, and it would, if you really looked it over, understood that thoroughly, you would say, duh, there's no space between me and the wall. There isn't, unless you put something there. You'd say, wow, I thought that communications that arrived in my letterbox were particles and so forth. Sure, you put them there. But you didn't write the letter. Oh, yes, you did. You must have. You read it, don't you? Well, if you read it, you must have written it. Every once in a while, you slip, and you receive a communication 2 days before it was written. Every once in a while, you dream. And you dream that you received a letter from the I Will Arise Society saying you have been unanointed as of this date. And you dream this and you say, boy, I'm certainly glad that isn't true. Good. 2 days later, you get the letter. Fantastic. How could this be? It's because time is communication consideration, too. It isn't true that every hunch you have is true, fortunately. It isn't true that every bad thing you dream up is going to come true, which you could have the consideration that it would, and that too would be a consideration. So as we look this over, we discover that this thing called force is subordinate to an idea, and it's the only thing I'm trying to tell you, and this thing called space is subordinate to an idea. If we lose fact and track here of these things being subordinate to ideas, then we try to move force with force. We try to push communications along with scoop shovels. We try to make a communication with a wire, an electrical wire. We try to make this come true, and when we make that come true, we lose the idea. And when a society is sufficiently inured into the stirring up of force with force, it doesn't have any ideas anymore. And what do you know? All of a sudden, it's all of its machines stopped running. Societies do not die because they overbuild themselves or underfeed themselves or overpopulate or elect the wrong party for politics. They die because they begin to believe that force moves force. And that's the long and the short of it. They no longer put ideas onto the communication line, and there is no further communication. That's the end of that. The reason we run separateness is so you can have space. You want space. When you run out of space, you've simply forgotten to put it there. The forgetter with which you forget forgettingness has gone out of whack to a marked degree. And the automatic machine that puts the automatic machines into action that make the automatic machines work, they've lost a cog. There's no repairman around. Auditor comes along and says, well, let's patch him up. What do you mean, patch him up? There aren't any nuts and bolts to patch up. Nothing to do about it. Fella's running out of space. He's running out of particles. He's running out of this, and he's running out of that. He's getting scarce in all directions. What are all these things of which he is getting scarce? What are they? In the final essence, what are they? They're ideas. And if they're ideas, they perish when you run out of ideas. That's about all. It's as simple as that. So your preclear can't see. He's forgotten to put something up there to look at. His eyeballs don't work. He's forgotten to mock them up. Body doesn't function. He's forgotten to put a good body there. Time is too short for him. He's forgotten to mock up some time. He's depending on some kind of an automaticity. Everybody thinks that everybody else is mocking up everything. And they're sort of going to ride along on all these considerations and somehow or other arrive at the opposite, an other end of the track. There is no other end of the track to arrive at. Well, it's quite interesting. Quite interesting. Quite fascinating. Reminds me of a couple of Chinese one time. It's an old story. They're fighting with words. They're talking. Yap, 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 yap. Fighting. A couple of rickshaw boys. American standing there. He says, well, they keep yelling at each other. When are they going to get in and fight? And his Chinese friend looks over at him and says, well, one who strikes first blow, admit he run out of ideas. One who got most aberration, admit he run out of ideas. One who used most force, admit he run out of ideas. One who got no world, he run out of ideas. One who don't have, he don't have ideas. Of course, you felt put upon when you were a child. Somebody was going to buy you a coaster wagon or baby buggy, and you had decided you were going to get it and acquire it in that fashion. They were going to buy it for you from the store, and it was going to come home. It was going to be nice and solid, and everybody was going to agree that it was there. And you felt put upon when you had to mock it up. You couldn't get the roller coaster or the coaster wagon or the baby buggy. You felt put upon. You said, that's not the right set of vias. I've got to mock this thing up. They're making me mock it up. They won't buy me this thing. They won't bring it home from the store. Well, you had to put it in the store for it to be bought in the store. I mean, it's part of your considerations and part of everybody else's considerations that it is in the store. And you decided it was going to come to you on that route, and then nobody furnished the number, proper number of dollars, cents, shillings, pounds. So you didn't get it. So you mocked it up, and this was an imposition. I think everybody with his mock-ups, when he loses them, simply loses them because it's an imposition to have to mock it up all by yourself, do it all yourself. Why not let all the automatic machinery do it? Why not let the god of the winds make the winds blow? Why not let Mother Earth go on mothering you? Only one difficulty with letting Mother Earth go on mothering you. You have to put her there first before she can say, rock-a-bye, baby. Engrams are all right with which to torture yourself. It's okay. It's as good as anything else. A little more mysterious sometimes. But unfortunately, even if you have a body that is putting them there, you still had to put them there. It's an awfully arduous and horrible thing to have to do it all yourself. It reduces the illusion of time, reduces the illusion of space, reduces the illusion of energy. If energy never gets anywhere, and you have lots of faith in energy, how can you expect to get anywhere? Well, energy doesn't ever get anywhere. It's very fabulous. You want to know another hole in the scheme of physics that would make a physicist, if you know this very well, you get what I'm talking about now, you could make a physicist do one of the more interesting things. He'd probably gape, not understand you. Then he'd have to understand you, and then he'd gape again and argue. And then he wouldn't understand you, and then he'd argue with you, and then he'd go look at his textbooks, and then he'd argue with you some more. His interest would be intense right up to the point where he went unconscious. And that little proposition is this: light travels 186,000 miles a second. Everybody knows that. How'd they measure it? Well, they measured it on a wire. Some kind of a... Don't ask me how they measured it, but everybody knows the 186,000 miles a second. Atom bomb blows up because... They got a constant C. It's a C, and it says that light travels at 186,000 miles a second. Very interesting thing. It's in all our equations, represents every place. It's one of the minor deities of nuclear physics. They'll be building temples to C, the next thing you know. All right, here's this constant C. It's a very fascinating constant. You point this out to a nuclear physicist or point it out to a physicist. Don't point it out to a physicist. You'll spin him. Nuclear physicist knows it's all nuts and that he is, too, by this time. But you point out this interesting day. 186,000 miles a second, light goes. You know that? Light departing from the sun travels at 186,000 miles a second. And was received where you are. You realize that? I don't know, time lapse, I've forgotten the exact factor. I think it's a time lapse of about 8-9 minutes, something like that. It just seems to me that that'd probably be the order of magnitude of the figure. Yeah, that's quite clear, isn't it? Well, light travels at 186,000 miles a second. Don't forget that. That's a very important figure. Light travels from a far distant star and takes so many seconds to reach Earth. Well, when the seconds are all multiplied, you get a light year. It's how far light travels in 1 year. In other words, they figured out that Arcturus's light shines down here on Earth, and as it shines down here on Earth, it was a long time in transmission. Light traveling 186,000 miles a second gets here in a couple of years, or 8 years, or whatever it is. Nearest star takes about a light year for... things. That's 186,000 miles a second those particles are traveling. They're arriving down here. I want you to get this figure real good. I want you to understand this. I want you to understand this thoroughly. It is the stable datum of the science of physics, and particularly the science of nuclear physics. If you were pulled out from underneath the science of nuclear physics, this stable datum, the entire house of cards would collapse, and very possibly an A-bomb wouldn't even explode thereafter. It's interesting. You'd invalidate every single cockeyed formula they have if you pulled out C. You say, what has this got to do with you? This is scientific material. What's it got to do with you? You fools. You let these guys come around and occupy a position in the society just like a priesthood. Why? Because of this mysterious minor deity, C. Light, transmission of, speed of, plutonium, hydrogen. Get in line, you slaves, you know? Fantastic. It's quite interesting. The most interesting thing about it, it isn't true, and it's demonstrably not true in the frame of reference of nuclear physics. And it's not only not true, but it's a hole sufficiently wide to blow the subject up. Now you think I'm really exaggerating. Now I've gone off the deep end. Oh, no, I haven't. Oh, no, I don't make statements like that unless I can kick everybody else overboard before they throw me off. Listen, this is the most wicked proposition Hubbard ever got mixed up in. This is wicked and vicious. We're going off on another excursion now. This universe is filled with space. It's got space everywhere, hasn't it? The space is pretty close to minus 273 degrees centigrade, isn't it? We know that. We know that. We can conduct an experiment, which is very, very interesting. There's a thing called an electronic bomb. When you have minus 273 degrees centigrade, when you have a minus 273 degrees centigrade, you have no resistance and infinite capacitance. Now, electrically, that means simply this. You can keep running electrical current into a small box, and you can keep running electrical current into this little condenser and run it and run it and run it and run it in there and run it in there. At minus 273 degrees, this condenser is, and we can pump billions and billions and billions and billions of kilovolts into there. So we can just pump it up and up more and more and more. Because it's so cold, you see, there's no resistance, you see. There is no motion at minus 273 degrees, so there's a resistance is zero, and then we take this condenser and we suddenly put it in the vicinity of a warm town, see? And it goes boom, and is one of the chief Russian counters to the atomic bomb. They have this electronic bomb. You get this, no? You see that? In other words, at a minus 273 degrees centigrade, you don't have any motion. You have infinite capacitance. You can put any quantity of electricity you want in a condenser. Any quantity in a condenser. How's a photon going to get from here to the sun? How's it going to get from the sun to here? How's it ever going to get from Arcturus to here? It can't. The temperature of space between the sun and here is minus 273 degrees centigrade. The space between here and the sun has infinite capacitance. It has zero resistance. There is no method under the sun, moon, or stars, or anywhere, by which a photon could leave the surface of the sun and arrive on Earth. It can't cross that space. It's not possible. Now, you think just because I'm talking in electronic terms that you're not supposed to understand this. Well, listen, you better damn well understand this. Let's get down to kindergarten terms now. We say this water is flowing from point A to point B. Now we discover that water cannot flow in a conduit pipe type beta. It just can't flow in it, that's all. And it can't flow in it because the beta conduit pipe is solid. Got that? Now we invent a science which bases all of its activities on the fact that water flows through beta conduit pipe from point A to point B. Can't do it. There's no photons arriving here from the sun. Couldn't possibly be true. You see the horrible conundrum we're up against? Here's physics, the thing that actually lies back of your automobiles, the thing that lies back of the policies of nations today, which is found to have this fantastic hole in it. Here is C, 186,000 miles a second. Where the hell anybody got that figure, I don't know. Nobody knows. Because if it were tested here on Earth, it was tested at Earth temperature. You could say 186,000 miles a second is the speed of a photon at Earth temperature. But it's not Earth temperature between here and the sun. It's minus 273 degrees centigrade. We do not get the light from the sun by the flow of photons through space. It's not possible. We do not know the speed of travel of light in space. It doesn't travel. It can't. Then how can we see a star? I don't know. Maybe you do it with mirrors. But all of a sudden, we have exceeded our own considerations. And all the boys in kindergarten may be having an awfully good time walking up plutonium. Plutonium is perfectly all right and very safe to handle. You can do everything with it you want to do as long as you stay at Earth temperatures. It's warm here on the surface of Earth. And this warmth on the surface of Earth permits sufficient electronic flow through wires and it permits a sufficient condensation of material as in a beryllium container. And permits a lot of things which are quite interesting, but that's Earth, and that's at one temperature level. And here we have another temperature level entirely with which we're dealing and on which we have based the entire science of physics and astronomy. We calculated the distance of planets, their weight, their mass, calculated everything you could think of out here in the solar system by mathematics, all based on this constant C, which can't exist in space. So we just dump overboard, as far as we're concerned, the entire structures of physics, nuclear physics, astronomy, and all the rest of it, on the concept and understanding that there is some limitation in these, and that they must not be a total truth. They could not possibly be a total truth if we, in simply looking around casually, can discover a hole of this magnitude. It's a hole of such magnitude that we say this company makes dishpans which hold water and dishes. And then we prove conclusively that dishpans made by this company will not hold water or dishes in any way. Therefore, that company does not make dishpans. You start catching one of the exact sciences this far off base, and you begin to understand that the basis of consideration on which a universe exists is consideration. When you can take the exact sciences and stretch them out just so far, and then catch them this far from home, catch them this far in error. Honest, if you just told a nuclear physicist these things I just told you, he would go nuts. He'd just go mad. He would gibber. He'd say, no. His stable data is based on the fact that light is coming through space. And if you prove to him, and he'd have to accept it, that light cannot travel through that space, there he'd go. So we don't know anything about astronomy. So we don't know very much about nuclear physics, but we do know this. We do know this. We know that particles proceed from considerations, and that when an individual runs out of considerations about time, about energy, about space, about mass, he runs out at once of time and energy and space and mass. And we can prove that too. We can change a fellow's mind on the subject of energy, creation of, and he at once should be able to make mock-ups. We take an individual who can't make mock-ups, we get him to change his mind, and then he can make mock-ups. The very funny part of a mock-up is it has weight and has mass according to scales here on Earth. You can make an individual remedy his havingness, mass after mass after mass, he'll retain that mass to some slight degree. All right, so we weigh him on an ordinary scale, and then we have him pull in havingness, not remedy havingness. Remember, remedy of havingness is changing his ideas about havingness. Remedy of havingness is pulling it in and throwing it away until he has adjusted his ideas that he can. That's what's important about havingness. But we do this other experiment, and we have this fellow pull in havingness. You see, he pulls it in, and 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 we weigh him again. He's increased 20 pounds. And the old school that says, you know, there are two kinds of energy. There's earth energy, and then there's mental energy, and they're both different. I bought that once, a fatal purchase. There aren't two kinds of energy. Mental energy has mass. It has weighable mass. And earth energy has weighable mass, and both of them stem from an idea that they're there. It's almost as if you were busy lying to yourself 99% of the time, and the other percent of the time, you are hoping you don't find it out. And if you can tell yourself enough lies, and if you can tell yourself enough adroit data on the subject of the composition of this and that, you can keep the exact sciences afloat, unless somebody comes along who is snide, mean, vicious, and has absolutely no reverence whatsoever for test tubes, such as myself, and says, minus 273 degrees through space, you know that. You could say innocently to another person, say, by the way, is capacitance infinite and conductance zero and minus 273 degrees? Oh, he'd say, yes, 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 that's provable, that's provable. You could ask him then, just as the next question, well, now how does a photon get here from the sun? He'd stop right there. Well, I can give you a datum of this magnitude, which we're not even bothering to take out and hang around the necks of the AEC or any other organization. Hell with them. It'd just spin them. We must conceive that there is a limitation to your imaginations. What's the idea of leaving a hole like that in your considerations? What's the idea of mocking up this universe so that it has a computable error in it to that degree? A fellow, by the way, who's challenged that way begins to feel rather uncomfortable if you go at him like that and you keep saying to him, what's the matter with you leaving a hole like that? It must have been your considerations the hole was in, not in a textbook sitting over in some university. You're going to get some kind of a random behavior every time you hit space. And therefore, space is going to become awfully incomprehensible. It's going to become very worrisome to you. You're going to get upset about this thing called space if you've got a bad datum in it like that. Light, it travels through space. This we know. Yeah. It doesn't. It probably leaves the warmth of the sun, if you want the mechanics of it, if they exist below the level of idea, leaves the warmth of the sun and then telepaths itself to the warmth of the upper atmosphere of Earth and then comes in. How does it cross the space? It doesn't. Some kind of a billiard ball effect. Or it crosses that space at infinite speed or some such thing, but not any measurable speed. Well, that's a hole in ideas, and that's because you don't happen to be dealing with minus 273 degrees space all the time. But if you get out of your body and you blow up into minus 273 degrees space, and you then, with all of your agreements that this is mess universe and this is this and that and so forth, put up a mock-up, you'll find your mock-ups behave in a very peculiar fashion indeed. And you'll say, something is wrong with my mocking up processes. No, nothing is wrong with your mocking up processes except this, that you're mocking up space through which energy cannot transit. You could put a million tons of mock-up up there and squeeze them all down to a cubic inch with the greatest of ease. Actually, it does affect the Thetan's mock-up ability when he gets out into space. His mock-ups do funny things. If you don't believe it, park somebody out here between the sun and Earth and have him start putting up mock-ups. And don't tell him they're going to behave in a peculiar fashion. He'll put them up for a little while. You want to make sure he's really in messed universe space, however. He has to be well adjusted to all of his ideas of energy and so forth. All right, the individual then, if he's mocking up a universe, goes just so far and he doesn't see any reason to go any further. The mock-up machinery of stuff out beyond his immediate sphere and view has a tendency to be neglected and break down. He stops mocking it up, in other words. And so then when he goes back and tries to compute on what it was, he is liable to make a considerable error. He's not mocking it up anymore. And so you, with your past, you're not really mocking up your past anymore. A facsimile of, if anything, is probably some shadow of the way you were mocking up the grenadiers in your company or some such thing. You're still mocking them up, only it's not a present time sort of a mock-up thing. So it has to be shadowy so that you'll know that it's yesterday. Every once in a while, Thetan has a funny little machine which decays mock-ups. This is a cute machine. A mock-up which is made 100 years ago is decayed 100 years' worth. Therefore, he can tell when they were made. You bust up this machine, you get some interesting things. You find out that your mock-ups have no decay. Ideas don't have a decay unless you say they do. An individual loses control of his own destiny when an individual loses control of this datum, that he puts it there with ideas. He runs out of everything when he runs out of ideas. If you could convince everybody that they had no ideas of any character, you would then have slaves. And very shortly thereafter, you wouldn't have any world or universe or anything else for those people. It's as simple as this. Run out of your ability to make ideas, you immediately run out of ideas. You immediately run out of space, energy, havingness, and so on. You want to look at the horrible and vast complexities of aberration. I am in a snide and vicious mood this morning, so I'm just laying it straight down and shooting it at you in the raw. But you is kidding yourself. If you think for one moment that you can have the actuality of anything you didn't create in the first place. And if you think there's a bunch of mechanical bric-a-brac that you've got to know in order to get a tremendous quantity of havingness and perceptingness and all the rest of this, why don't you invent some? Why don't you invent some mechanical bric-a-brac? Why don't you invent new ways and means of mocking up elephants walking down Holland Park Avenue? If your life is insufficiently romantic, why don't you invent some romance? If your life is unhappy, why don't you invent some happiness? It's the only happiness you'll ever know. If your life isn't replete with adventure, invent some, if you please. A person has as little adventure as he is incapable of inventing it. An individual has as little happiness as he has lost the power to create it. And this isn't any Pollyanna statement. This is simply a blunt statement of fact, as blunt as the fact that mass and is mass is mass, you know? If you want to prove everything by the mass which you mocked up, that's all right with me, too. If you want to associate with a bunch of people who will go as far out of agreement with you in your co-mocking up of a universe, since it's a cooperative effort, as to let them blow it up so that you then will share in the action of mocking up what they're blowing up, or mocking up the blow-up that is happening, well, that's all right, too. It's all right, too, if you want to do that. But I think that it's rather dull to go that far just because you've lost the ideas behind them. You'll just have to get a whole bunch of ideas all over again and put them all on automatic and go through the whole works. Now, you probably doubt that anything as solid as a wall could ever be produced by you. Well, if you doubt it, why don't you make a wall sometime? The second rule of magic is supposed to be, do not be the effect of your own cause. That would be the basic rule of having no universe. Never become the effect of your own cause. And if you never did, you'd never have a universe, you'd never have any mass, and you wouldn't have any aberrations, and you wouldn't have anything, and it'd just be all nothing from there on down. This would be rather dull. Now, people tell you got to stay away from people and you can't have anything very much to do with people. And the other side of all of this idea business is that you have ideas in common with other people. And if you fall out of agreement and pace with other people, you will then not have any universe either. So there's a second side of them, of an idea. You have an idea with, and you all have an idea. You have an idea separate, and you all have no universe. If everybody under the sun is going to have an idea which is highly individualized on the subject of universes, why, pretty soon the ground will get mighty thin. You know, I don't know how far down you're mocking up ground, but I was looking the other day, and you're not doing it very well these days. As a matter of fact, you're only doing it a few miles. There's nothing from there on down. It's not solid at all. You've just gotten lazy. And it's all in the textbooks that Earth is round, and it's all thick from there on down. But this is not true. It's not any more thick from there on down. It just goes down a few miles, and then there isn't anything. So you're getting careless. But the point is, when you become unwilling to be the effect of your own cause, when you become unwilling to be the effect of your own cause, you lose a universe. You have to be willing to be the effect of your own cause, you have to be willing to be the effect of other people's cause, or you don't have a universe of any kind. It just isn't there anymore. And this is sad, but it's true. So you go around spotting people. You go around spotting people. You go around having a good time spotting all these people. Next thing you know, things start to get brighter. Why do they get brighter?
Oh, it's very easy. You find out somebody else probably working on mock-ups, too. And you're not completely alone in this char. You may have also been doing this. Everybody else was mocking things up, but you weren't, you slacker. Well, he started to disappear for you because you went out of agreement with them. Now, what is this you and them? That's an idea. You are an individual. There is no pool of life. There's a mirror that Thetans used to look into. You can find it on the whole track anytime you want to look. It's a pool of thought. They could look into it and see mock-ups. Nearly every Thetan's had one of these at one time or another, but this didn't mean that life was a pool. Life is not a pool. A pool has dimension. Life does not have dimension. Now, it is very difficult to conceive the non-dimensional character of life if you yourself are automatically and constantly intent upon life, being there. You're intent on putting life there, you're intent on keeping life there and keeping form spaces, and all these other characteristics, intent on this so thoroughly that to turn around and look the opposite direction becomes difficult. And so therefore it appears mysterious. But all you have to do in order to make the world look a lot brighter is simply spot its being there. Funny part of it is you do it so easily that it's a wonder why you work at it. You try so hard. The more you try, the less you'll get. And the reason why is you'll never produce anything out of energy as long as you live. You'll never use energy to produce any effect upon energy. If you want to move energy, you will move it with the lightest touch you can master. The lightest touch you can master. You got that? As mass approaches infinity, the force required to move it approaches zero. That's about all there is to it. If the force required to move it is an idea, and an idea is not force. If you make and can make a sufficiently light mock-up, with a sufficiently light touch, that is to say, if you can get the idea lightly enough to have a mock-up, you occluded cases will get one. If you can do it more lightly and airily than that, everybody else will see it too. If you want to move Earth so that it doesn't have four seasons anymore and so that you poor people don't get coughs all the time, all you'd have to do is think lightly enough at the North Pole to straighten Earth up on its axis. And you could do it if you could think lightly enough. You're trying too hard. Trying. That means use force. That means use pressure. That means get in there and sweat. You won't get anything if you get in there and sweat. The more you sweat, the less you have. That's a cinch. The more you strain, the less you work. It's done with the lightest possible touch. It's done with the most careless frame of mind. That's the way it's done. If you're not getting mock-ups out there, it's because you're trying to put a mock-up out there. Now, there's a series of processes that match up with this, which are quite interesting. One of the more basic, interesting processes along this line is tell me something you're not trying to do. Tell me something you don't have to do at this moment. You can take the formula of be, do, and have, and assume that the Thetan in a higher state isn't doing anything, you see. And then you'd simply ask the things that an individual didn't have to be, didn't have to do, didn't have to have, and clear him up on that basis. But as a Thetan can have anything, it's very probable that the first postulate is the reverse. I have to be, I have to do, I have to have. But the process itself, highly theoretical process, Is workable just to this degree that an individual, this is a theoretical process, I repeat, it's just an illustrative thing. If you want to fool around, we'll go ahead. Two-way communication, discussion on this thing is usually results in quite amusing results. We just ask the fellow for some things he doesn't have to have at this moment and doesn't have to do at this moment. Doesn't have to be right now. That's all. We'd get him out of this horrible trying. Now, there's a companion series of processes which are really a little better and so forth. Would be to make the fellow get the idea of having, not having to have, the idea of having a wall, the idea of doing a dance, the idea of being a man. There's only one difficulty with that series of processes. They're liable to dig up the automaticities. They're liable to dig the automaticities up so grandly that the world will go askew from a prequel. Nevertheless, that's the essence of it. If you can't get the idea that there is a wall there, you see, it's too sudden, the process is all that's wrong with it. It's too sudden. If you happen to get the idea there's a wall there, why, he's really making the idea that there's a wall there. One way to run HC is get the idea there's a wall over there. Of course, it's sitting over there, solid as can be. He can see that. Well, it gets thin and it gets thick and it does all sorts of random things. Because basically that wall is his idea. So I ask you, what are you trying so hard for? As your force approaches infinity, your mass will approach zero. As your effort approaches infinity, your accomplishment will approach zero, and that's for sure. Got it? What you're trying to rehabilitate is a mind, not a mass. There are ways to rehabilitate masses. You do it with chisel and adze and other things of that character, but this isn't a course in stone crafting, a course in changing ideas. So let's develop a little more light touch, shall we? Okay, thank you.